He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is John Katzimatidis. This is Katz at Night, the number one show at 5 o'clock right now. And in the studio we have Governor David Patterson. We have former Congressman Vito Fisella and former Supreme Court Justice, Judge.
Richard Weinberg.
The Richard Weinberg.
Thank you.
And
current sidekick.
Current sidekick and long-term sidekick. Lydia Serrano.
Good.
Breaking news, WABC.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland has issued an official memo to use the FBI to go after parents who protest critical race theory in schools.
That is crazy. Judge Jeanine, how do you feel about that?
She's mad as hell.
How do you think I feel
about
it?
Oh, my God.
It?
Where's the mad as hell?
Yeah, we need
hold on
this,
a second.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
We only have 14,000 FBI agents in the whole country, and there's 14,000 school boards. What are we going to do? Are they going to chase terrorists, or are they going to chase parents that don't like critical race theory?
Look, we have seen the FBI, and look, when I was a DA, I had a lot of friends in the FBI. I worked with them, but we have seen it of late being nothing more than a political organization. James Comey, he ruined the FBI, and now they're weaponizing it to go after parents. I mean, talk about mom and apple pie. This is the most outrageous thing that they have done. And you know what's great about this, guys? Merrick Garland, you remember? This is the guy that Barack Obama wanted to put on the United States Supreme Court as the moderate. This guy is so left-wing, he is directing the FBI to go after parents who are criticizing school board members and schools for critical race theory, which is something that is so bizarre and is something that parents don't want.
Listen.
And now what we're seeing is the socialization of these children in a way where they're being ideologically trained to believe that their parents are not their parents, but the school and the government are. And by the way, the whole thing is illegal. You cannot suppress free speech. You cannot suppress freedom to assemble. The FBI can't even handle, like, the Olympic case with Larry Nassar. They screwed that one up to a fare-thee-well. Jeffrey Epstein case, they screwed that one up, too. Parkland shooting, don't get me going on the FBI. They can barely handle what they do. And now they're going to stick them after parents. You know, they can only go so far. You know, Mama Bear, push her.
I find that I know a lot of FBI people, and I think they are a loyal, hardworking group that love America. And the political leadership that politicians place in there is what's hurting the FBI. That's my opinion. Judge Weinberg, you have his comment?
Judge Jeanine, Judge Richard, how are you?
Good. How are you?
So let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question. What's the federal crime that authorizes the Justice Department to go after parents?
There is no federal crime. They have no jurisdiction. It's an intimidation effort. It's an attempt to chill speech. It's an attempt to get people to say, oh, my gosh, I'm not going to go to the meeting because they're going to send an FBI to my home. That's all it is. They have did it with Black Lives Matter when they burnt down streets and businesses, and they did nothing. And yet, whenever it comes to January 6th, I mean, we're going to be hearing about January 6th for the next 10 years. They're going to write it up in the history books. There is no crime there. And you know what? It's not going to work. And Joe Biden today with his bad jobs report, he turns around and doesn't take a question. Bobblehead there? This is ridiculous.
Now, are they trying to tie up the FBI on nonsensical stuff? And so they can't do their real job.
I think, John, what they're trying to do, the Biden administration, the FBI, and Merrick Garland, is to create this narrative, to perpetuate this narrative that they've been talking about from the beginning, that white supremacy, that domestic terrorism is the greatest threat facing our nation. That's what I think they're trying to do here.
Well, I think what they're doing is criminalizing dissent. That's their goal. And there's a part of me
There's a part of me that actually wants them to play this out and put this into place, and we'll watch the reaction across the country as a 32-year-old mother gets up and just questions a school board about something that's being taught in the school. And by the way, it doesn't just apply to critical race theory. It applies to anything that there's a dissent or disruption. So Judge, it's Vito Fasella. Great to be with you again tonight. Have you ever seen something like this move so quickly through the Department of Justice? And is there a precedent or something that you can remember that goes as far as this, as you all said, federalizing something that's not federal and criminalizing dissent in such a way?
No, I've never seen a veto, and I don't even have to think about it. You know, they've weaponized now the Department of Justice, the FBI. They're trying to weaponize the IRS so that everybody who has $600 in their bank account will know every time they move it, touch it, add to it, or take away from it. And adding additional FBI agents for an additional $79 billion to audit all of us. This is an effort by the government to control us. And the more I see, the more I realize that this is really fascism. Political correctness has taken away our free speech. If you say something politically incorrect, you're canceled. You lose your job. You're despised. We are in a very dangerous place right now in America.
Well, it's almost the reverse of what happened in the 50s when people were associated with the Communist Party for anything they said. And now it's the opposite. I have a question, though. In Garland's statement, did he mention critical race theory or any of the issues at all? Because originally, when it first came out, I thought they, and it still, in my opinion, would be wrong, but I thought they were using the FBI to combat violence at the school board meetings.
Well, I think, and I'm looking at it right now, he's talking about threats. Threats are something that if they are immediate, then it's handled by the local DA, the local police, the sheriff's department. I mean, this is a joke. Anyone who's a real FBI agent, anyone who's a real G-man is going to say, I didn't join the FBI for this. And, you know, I got to tell you, John, I get what you're saying, and I love guys in the FBI, too. But, you know, the FBI did mess up Parkland, and they did mess up Epstein, and they did mess up the Larry Nassar case. Well, I mean, they're not used to handling crimes that your DAs are handling very well every day. They ought to stick their nose in their own business, stay out of politics, and stay out of local crime.
Well, I think they want to do that. I think they want to deal with important crimes like terrorism and keeping people safe.
Bank robberies,
yeah, etc.
I think what's interesting is that memo said threats. It didn't say specific threats of violence.
Exactly.
It just said threats. So somebody could yell at a school board, and that's considered threatening. I feel threatened.
Well, there's two
things. No. Yelling is not threatening.
But that's what they could maybe use that umbrella term for.
That is
a threat would have to be a violent threat.
And there's two things. One is the National School Board Association that actually initiated this claims falsely that critical race theory is not taught in schools. That's just a plain out just not true. And secondly, what you have here is one instance, if I'm not mistaken, they point to an aggravated situation in the state of Illinois where justifying this whole new approach to, as you say, Judge, to basically weaponize the Justice Department to go across the country and to stand up and threaten or chill dissent among any parent who dares stand up and questions what's being taught to their young kids.
It was a trade association of the school boards that said that this was domestic terrorism. That was their term of art, and that was their referral letter to the Justice Department.
You know, the amazing part of this, guys, is that, and lady, is that I had a plumber who was working at my house today, and he has a 7-year-old daughter. And I said to him, what do you think of the vaccine mandate? They're about to get approval. What are you going to do when they tell you that you have to vaccinate your daughter? Now, we didn't have much of a discussion beforehand. He said, that's when I pull my daughter out of school. Nobody's going to tell me that I have to vaccinate my daughter. You know, and when they get crazy, it's going to be one thing after another. They keep chipping away a threat. you know, a mask. You know, we've got little kids coming home from school crying because they wear eyeglasses that fog up because they wear their mask. They pull their mask down to clear the fog, and then the teacher yells at them. This is insanity. I've never seen it like this. I don't know if you guys have, but I've never seen the outrage. And everybody's angry right now. Everybody's angry. You drive, people are ready to kill you.
Do we have an undeclared civil war, Janine?
What kind of war?
Undeclared. Non-shooting. Absolutely. We're shooting with words.
We have a cultural war. We certainly have a cultural war in this country.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think that there is so much tension, so much anger, so much frustration. Guys, and it started with China, and that was weaponized, and it put all of us in a box. Did this country have to be shut down for so long? Did the governors in California and New York and Michigan have to do what they did? You know, small businesses have lost their businesses. Now it's the big box companies. I mean, this is the Marxist playbook. I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth. In the United States of America, I love this country. But that is what's happening, and that's why people are angry. They're very angry.
But
and you've got low information people who just believe that, you know, that this country is racist. You talk to anybody. You go in any town in America, white people and black people and brown people and yellow people, everybody's related, everybody's in the family, everybody's friends. It's bananas.
I marched for years in the Columbus Day Parade. And I'm not Italian. Now, if I went to Boston, I couldn't march in a Columbus Day parade. I have to march in something called the Indigenous People's Day
parade. Well, there is no Columbus Day in Boston now.
Yeah, the mayor outlawed it.
Well, today, we had a gigantic press conference about 11 o'clock?
Right.
At Chad's
Palminteri's new restaurant.
Mm-hmm. With the Columbus Foundation and with Angelo Vivolo. And we broke our way towards...
You cut the meatball, right?
Well, that was... We had a press conference announcing
the Columbus Day Parade
on Monday.
Which
we're covering. To symbolize that we're kicking it off, we took a giant meatball and we cut it in half.
I love that. Now, I love that.
Janine, you got another 2 minutes?
Yeah, I got 2 minutes.
Okay,
we're going
to do what we tried to do yesterday. We're celebrating WABC's 100th anniversary. And
yes.
Rush Limbaugh started 32 years ago on WABC. And we played it last Sunday after your show. And there was a tidbit I wanted to play for all Americans. It's Rush Limbaugh, 32 years ago. It talks about the Iranian 747. And you know what it shows you?
What?
32 years later, nothing has changed.
Nothing changed.
Let's go to Rush Limbaugh 32 years ago. And let's listen to it. And we'll come back and we'll all comment on it.
WABC Talk Radio 77, Rush Limbaugh, New York, 20 minutes after 10. Back to the phones we go. Vinny from New York. Hello. Glad you're with us.
All right, Rush. Thank you. One thing that I do want to say first is, though, you mentioned KAL Flight 007.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that that's a fair comparison.
Oh, I agree with you. It's not. But you got to realize there are going to be those who are going to make it.
Yeah.
Don't you realize there are people out there who are eager for this country to take it on the chin, take it in the shorts? There are, within our own shores, there's an anti-American crowd.
I think the Russian MiGs had the plane, like, in visual sight. They knew that it was a 747.
And they didn't warn it. You're absolutely right.
We did not. And I believe this is a tragedy. It definitely is for the Iranian families. But
do you really care about the Iranian families?
What?
I mean, people say that all the time. It's definitely a tragedy for the American families. Do we really care about the American families? Do we really care about a situation like this?
You know, because there is a point where you say to yourself, look, there could have been innocent. There were innocent people on the plane, okay? But, you know, one thing about most of the callers, and I don't know what you'd say the type of person the Ayatollah is, but can you imagine how it's so easy for us to believe that he would send this plane to be shot down? because he's not a stupid man. And I see that since he's taken over power, we know that he's not stupid.
Wait, let me see if I understand your point. You think the Ayatollah may have purposely sent this plane full of civilians on a flight path that guaranteed it would be shot down by a U.S. warship. For what purpose?
Because I believe that he needs two things. I believe every now and again he needs something to keep his people fired up.
Right, good point.
And I believe he needs something to keep our people fired up against, you know, certain elements in this country fired up against the military and against our being in the Persian Gulf. Okay? And I think that a lot of callers feel that. I think that a lot of callers feel, and it, you know, it's an accident, if you want to, but I think that this, in the back of everyone's mind, there's that little bit that thinks, hey, wait a minute, maybe this guy's not so stupid, you know?
Well, the Ayatollah is deathly ill. Now, if this is the Ayatollah doing this, he's remarkably in possession of his faculties, and the word is that the Ayatollah is in bad shape. Cancer is eating his body away, even as you and I speak. There is something that's going on in Frankfurt, West Germany tomorrow that may or may not be tied into this, but do you remember TWA 847?
Yes.
Hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Steedham beat to death with the butt end of a rifle.
Yeah, Captain Testrake.
That's right. Well, the guy who did it goes on trial tomorrow.
Yes.
Muhammad Ali Hamadi,
mm-hmm,
in Frankfurt, West Germany.
Right.
And I wonder if there's a connection.
There's many connections. You know.
There's also, let me give you another connection. We'll give you something else to think about.
Right.
And that is that there is a Pentagon scandal. Procurement scandal.
Right.
And this is WABC Talk Radio 77. Rush Limbaugh will be back.
Keep listening to 77.
I'm shocked. Pentagon scandal. Can anybody believe this is 32 years ago?
Right. And
it almost could sound like we can play back last month's news or a couple months ago.
Who can you replace for the Ayatollah now, Xi Jinping?
Yeah.
Can you?
Well, no, you could replace them with the same Ayatollah. They still hate us. That's number one. And number two, conspiracy theories abound in terms of, the bombing of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie. And, and then you've got craziness at the Pentagon. I mean, you know, what's interesting about that is that Americans have always been, you know, very savvy in terms of looking beyond what's right in front of them. And I think that we've kind of been trained, because we analyze a lot, to look at conspiracy theories and this, that, and the other thing. And you know what was the best about all that was listening to Rush Limbaugh. I miss them so much. I really do. He was such a force. I always listened to him to find out, you know, what's the right way to handle something. But it was great listening.
Any other comments, guys, before we go to a break?
Well, I got a little breaking news. President Biden just issued a proclamation commemorating Indigenous Peoples Day. He's become the first president to do so.
How about Columbus?
Who's Columbus? What did he ever do?
Who's an Indigenous
person?
Will
all Indigenous peoples please stand up?
Oh, this is so disappointing.
He's so woke.
Actually, he's
so woke. That's why the guy needs to sleep all the time and take naps.
Can you take a pill for that?
Yeah. Janine Pirro, I'm going to be listening for you on Sunday. You're on at 11 o'clock. You have one great show every Sunday. And,
yep, and
WABC, radio.com, or 770 in the New York area. Janine Pirro, between 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock on Sundays.
Yep, looking forward to it. We've got a lot going on, a lot in the news. We'll analyze everything. And thanks, guys, for having me on with you. I love being on. Take care. Bye-bye.
Let's go to a break, and we're going to have breaking news. Oil hit just about $80 a barrel, and we're supposed to have Larry Kudlow after this.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Catsimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC. Breaking news, WABC.
Crude oil prices have touched $80 a barrel for the first time since 2014.
And Larry Kudlow, who is with us today, and me and you talked about it in February, in March, in April. What say you? How's that going to affect our country?
Well, it's not good by itself. I don't know, $80 a barrel is not the worst thing in the world. It's what's behind it that troubles me. because so much of this is a function of very bad anti-fossil fuel policies from the Biden administration. So we should be encouraging production and investment of oil and gas here at home, but unfortunately, they are discouraging it, and they'd rather go hat in hand to Saudi Arabia or give Russia the Nord Stream pipeline to pump gas into Europe instead of opening up the Keystone pipeline and, you know, allowing leases on federal lands or allowing the ANWR oil development in Alaska. I mean, you know, these are things that are going to really catch up. And if they get this Green New Deal stuff through in the $5 trillion budget, you're going to have a problem because the world economy is rising and the U.S. is only putting out 11 million barrels a day. And 2 years ago, or really 20 months ago, the U.S. was putting out well over 13 million barrels a day. And, John, the oil people in the U.S. don't want to produce and don't want to invest. They don't want to put up the money because they see the administration's policies with taxes and overregulation are going to hurt them. And so we're paying for this. It's not a catastrophe right now, but it could become worse and worse over time. You've got too much demand chasing too few supplies, and we could do a much better job. In fact, we could put back 13.5 million barrels a day. That would ease the price right then and there. We don't have to go to Saudi Arabia.
And it's a real mess what Joe Biden did to us. I mean, the first week he was president, he shut down the Keystone pipeline.
Yep. But I will say this. I'm a real contrarian today. The jobs numbers are a lot better than the top line suggested. I just want to make this point to your listeners, and I will make it again tomorrow on our radio show.
Let me remind everybody, Kudlow is on. He's on Monday through Friday on Fox Business at 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock after the market closes. But on WABC, recapping the entire week, on Saturday mornings between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock.
10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
10 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Thank you, John. I just want to say to everybody, private jobs, private enterprise jobs, did very well in this report with 100,000 upward revisions in July and August. You were at over 400,000 jobs, which is pretty much the consensus for private jobs. And look, the unemployment rate went down. Wages went up. Hours worked went up. These are very healthy developments, and I know everybody wants to trash the Biden economy, but looking at it empirically and factually, putting the politics aside, this was actually a strong employment report. And here's where I'm going with this. You know, the economy is doing better. It's still the post-Trump. It's still Trump's economy until they start ruining it with even higher taxes and more regulations. And if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We don't need $6 trillion of so-called spending stimulus, which I might add would discourage work with a European-style entitlement state. We don't need that. We don't need the Federal Reserve to keep pumping money in and financing all the borrowing, which has caused inflation, which is sticky. So those things, you know, Save America, kill the bill. But on the other hand, I will say objectively, John, today's employment report was much better than the top line and much better than people are making it out to be.
Larry, what's your prognosis for the success of the kill the bill movement?
Well, Governor, I think, frankly, I'm getting a little more optimistic because the more people see and read, the less they like it. The polls on it are terrible. People do not want more spending and inflation, and they do not want higher taxes that will destroy jobs. So to be honest with you, I'd say we are getting to a point where there's a 40%, maybe even better than that, higher than that chance of this thing going down. And because they're going to loop in the infrastructure bill with the spending bill, that means the whole package could go down. And although there are things in the infrastructure bill I would save, I wouldn't mind seeing that thing rewritten. The other thing should be just thrown out. It's a terrible thing. It really is a big government socialist bill. And I'm a free enterpriser, so I don't like it.
Larry, the prices...
They're on their heels right
Prices are going up. Prices are going up all over the place. The price of gasoline is going up. The price of clothing is going up. The price of food is going up much higher than you
You know, you can't even get appliances. My sister has a property in Queens, and as part of the landlord, you have to get like a stove. You can't even find appliances anymore. That's how bad it's getting.
But Lydia, do you have a $600 bank account?
What do you mean? Oh, because the IRS is going to track it? Anything to do with $600?
Big Brother is watching you. If you have a $600 bank account, and by the way, if you don't have one, Governor Patterson's friends are going to just give you one. That's their policy. So now
that's what they told me.
The IRS says, Governor, you may get a subsidy, basic income subsidy. Who knows? Anyway, the IRS wants to look at everything you do. Now, remember, they said this was to get after rich tax cheats. Would you consider a $600 bank account rich?
I think selling your art prints for $75,000 a piece is pretty rich.
Well, of course, Hunter Biden probably won't have his bank account.
John's shaking his head.
That's very good, Lydia. Very, very good. Touché.
Larry, do you see things moving forward in our economy through the first quarter of next year at least?
I do. Look, I think there's a lot of momentum here. You're going to get, let me warn, you're going to get a lousy GDP number in Q3, which ended September 30th. The number will be released towards the end of this month. It's going to be in the 1% to 2% zone. But the economy is stronger than that. And besides jobs, private jobs, which are better, you've got a lot of business capital spending going on. Although, unfortunately, not in energy. And consumers are very, very strong. And maybe most of all, business profits, corporate profits, are very strong. And profits are the mother's milk of stocks and the lifeblood of the economy. And look, Biden's policies, if this stuff gets through, is going to do great damage. And you'll see some of that damage towards the middle of next year or later. And they will slow things down very badly. They're going to throw a wet blanket. But right now, just forget the policies for a minute. Right now, the economy is in better. It's in very decent shape, in my judgment. Very decent shape.
Why are the bank stocks so strong lately?
Well, that's one reason. That's one reason, because the economy, bank stocks are cyclical. And, you know, bank stocks, industrial stocks, energy stocks, commodity stocks, all the cyclical growth sensitive stuff is doing very well. All right. And that's the reason. Now, with banks also, John, they have more money than, frankly, they know what to do with. And they have very strong capital positions. So, you know, why not? They're a bargain. If you think the economy is going to grow and you think the global economy is going to grow, which happens to be my view, at least for the foreseeable future, before we do crazy things in Washington, then you do want to own the banks. And a lot of financial institutions should be bought here.
Larry, it's Richard Weinberg. I was pretending to be the governor before. I always wanted to be governor, but I never had the chance.
A horse of a different color.
But I want to ask you about the nominee for controller of the currency and what that means for the future of our country.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite topics. This woman, Amarova, I think her name is, who graduated from the Moscow State University and wrote her thesis about how good socialism is and how bad capitalism is. This is one of the worst things I've ever seen. One of the stupidest things I've ever seen. This is a woman who, by the way, hates banks. She wants to nationalize the banking system. She wants to end private banking and financial institutions, and have the Federal Reserve and the controller of the currency and the FDIC just run everything. Credit allocation, loans, you name it. They want to run it. Set prices. This is craziness. I mean, you basically, you know, it's a communist nomination. They say they're socialist. This is even worse. I don't think she's going to get through the Senate, by the way. The Republicans will vote against her all 50 of them probably, and I think there'll be a bunch of Democrats voting against her. But it's a horrible nomination, and it kind of shows you how bad the soft underbelly of the Biden administration thinking is.
Well, Larry Kudlow, thank you so much for coming aboard and talking about what's right and wrong in our economy, and God bless you, and God bless America.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I believe we have Dr. Michalos with some more breaking news.
John Katzenmatidis, 77 WABC.
Breaking news, WABC.
The New York Times has issued a major correction. Yesterday, it reported that nearly 900,000 kids were hospitalized with COVID throughout the pandemic. The truth? 63,000, and the majority of those kids, almost all of them, had severe underlying conditions. Dr. Peter Michalos, our resident medical genius, Renaissance man, how could they possibly get this so wrong?
Well, I think that's one of the problems that we're getting a lot of in misinformation and changes in numbers. So that's one of the problems, that it makes the public lose confidence in some of these issues related to COVID. But we have yet to see what's going to happen with the children's vaccines and what's happening with COVID. But we have so many exciting things happening with the oral antivirals, which will hopefully get this pandemic under control, and hopefully that will come to our senses and have a better blood test to show that the 120 million Americans who already had COVID and had antibodies will be able to have a blood test just like you did for measles, rubella, and you had to show it for school or camp, that they'll be able to hand in those letters, because it's ridiculous to let nurses and doctors who've gotten it and mandating them to have a vaccine. I think they need to look at that more carefully. If they've had the disease and they have antibodies, they shouldn't be getting rid of nurses and doctors when we need them more than ever now. But going on to some other exciting breaking news, there's going to be a blood test now with one blood draw that can detect 50 cancers early
50
on.
Cancers.
And
that's
50
incredible.
Cancers.
Which
71%.
Cancers?
Well, I'll tell you how it starts. 71% of cancers are types that there's no early detection. So there's going to be a blood test, and they were using it for pregnant women to find chromosomal defects, and then they found, oh my God, we found all these other defects, and then they found out that through a blood test and through these methylation changes on certain cells in our blood, they were able to find early ovarian, pancreatic, and other things that normally you wouldn't be able to find. The company is called Grail, and the test is called the Galleri test, and just now in the last few weeks, it's starting to become available even in New York, and there's a hospital system in Washington that's going to do it as part of its routine test. So imagine that you'll be able to get a blood test and you'll be able to catch something super early, so the chances of surviving
are great. Pancreatic cancer. I mean, what's the death rate on pancreatic cancer?
Well, exactly. You're gone and usually in 6 months, but now if you catch it super early, you can get it resected and treated. That's going to be amazing, because this year we have 600,000 people on target to die from cancer in 2021. And another thing is, so many people didn't go for colonoscopies during COVID. If I encourage them, you sometimes hear the ads about Cologuard, and it's the same basis. They have a stool sample, you mail it in, and it finds 92% of colon cancers just from your stool. It finds abnormal DNA associated with colon cancer, and it finds blood in the stool. So for all those people out there who are afraid to go get a colonoscopy, at least ask your doctor about this mail-in stool test that can find 92% of
colon cancer. And what's the cancer test called?
The cancer test is called the Galleri test, G-A-L-L-E-R-I. And then the other amazing, exciting news is there's a vaccine now for malaria, and the World Health Organization announced the Mosquirix vaccine, because there's 220 million cases of malaria a year, 400,000 people a year die from malaria, and 260,000 of them are African children under the age 5. So this is a major, major thing.
400,000 people die a year from malaria?
Yeah. Of malaria, so, and 260,000 children die in Africa. So now with this vaccine, it'll help reduce that death rate and help us get it under control. So that's the other amazing news.
So
and I know we're yes.
Dr. Michalos, this is David Patterson. Their malaria was a serious disease in on the African continent, and sickle cell anemia actually was developed as a if you had it, you couldn't get malaria. So originally, it wasn't a bad thing to have. But my understanding now is that they have a sickle cell anemia medication that doesn't actually prevent the virus, but can stabilize it. Have you read about that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be there's even a genetic therapy now that might even be able to cure sickle cell anemia. So that's even amazing and exciting. Some of the new technologies that are happening, and we spoke about in the Cats Written Table, the OSK genes being done at Harvard by Dr. Sinclair. They reverse blindness in mice, and now they did apes, and in 12 months they're going to start human clinical trials and reverse blindness and retinal damage and glaucoma and for spinal cord injuries, which is very amazing. And in addition, other exciting news are we can prevent migraine headaches with a new monoclonal antibody treatment that blocks a neurotransmitter, a brain chemical called GPRP, and it reduces migraine sufferers 50 to 70% less migraines every month, and that's going to increase work productivity, and that's out. It's called Aimovig, and that's another. It's done once a month. You take a little shot in your leg or wherever, just like an EpiPen, and that's a new hope for migraine people, and that's exciting new news. And the other great news is there's an early Alzheimer's blood test that can be measuring certain chemicals, because in Alzheimer's you lose memory and thinking. It usually starts in the 60s. Something builds up in the brain called beta amyloid and tau protein. And now there's a company that's developed a test that will be able to measure the beta amyloid levels in your plasma and tell you with pretty high accuracy whether you're going on to get Alzheimer's disease, so you can start interventions much earlier. So a lot of things are coming out through the new science, and even the mRNA vaccines, they were originally developed to attack cancer. So they're going to do a biopsy, sample your tumor, analyze it, and develop a specific mRNA vaccine to attack your specific cancer. So a lot of exciting things that are happening, because we're all of us now just have COVID on our brain, and we're all suffering for COVID brain. So I wanted to bring other exciting news that's happening in the world of cancer, Alzheimer's, malaria, and that amazing blood test, which will detect early cancers before they're just beginning, and 50 different types of cancer.
Well, Dr. Peter Michalos, thank you for keeping all of us informed and all of our listeners informed.
That gallery test, I put it on our Twitter. So yeah. It's G, for the people that don't have Twitter, it's GALLERI.com, and you can find it on our Twitter at 77WABC.
Wow. Send it to me, too.
I tagged you on it.
Hey, we want to share things to help our audience to live long and have a long, healthy life. And
I remember that. A friend of mine used to say, live long and prosper.
Absolutely. We all want to die young at an old age in the best condition possible.
Well, Dr. Michalos, thank you so much. And are we taking a break now? And we're going to come back with Angelo Vivolo. It's Columbus Day on Monday. Let's take a break and we'll come back with Angelo Vivolo.
It's a common sense recap of the big stories. It's Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Oh, Lordy. Oh, God, Daddy. Oh, let's fly way up to the clouds.
Well, Monday is Columbus Day, and we had a special kickoff. And to tell us about it, we have the president or director of the Columbus Foundation, or chairman of CEO of the Columbus Foundation. We have Angelo Vivolo. Angelo, how are you?
I am splendid. I can't thank you enough, John, for the incredible kickoff we had this morning. It was just overwhelming.
Tell all America about it.
Well, had everyone there. We were able to talk about New York City coming back and the Columbus Day Parade leading the way, because it's going to be the biggest parade in the city since COVID had happened. And we're so excited about all the participants. We're going to have probably 15 to 20,000 people marching up Fifth Avenue on Monday. We're going to have floats. We're going to have marching bands. We're going to have a great deal of activity. And John, I don't know what to say except God bless you, and you are officially an Italian-American. I'm sorry. I know I know you have a Greek name, but as far as I'm concerned, you're as much Italian as any of us.
So weren't you conceived on an Italian?
I was conceived Italian. And I was born Greek, but I was conceived Italian, and I'm 28% Italian.
Well, as far as we're concerned, you're 100% Italian.
Thank you.
It was such an opportunity today to tell the public all of the good things that we're doing with the Columbus Citizens Foundation.
And
the fact that we're back, and we're going to be do a parade, a live parade up Fifth Avenue, and we're going to have a lot of excitement going on. And we're looking forward to it.
Is this really the largest Columbus Day parade in the world?
Largest Columbus Day parade in the world. Absolutely. That's the Columbus Day parade here in New York City.
And we got one Italian here in the studio right now. We have former Congressman Vito Fisella. Vito?
Well, it's good to be with you, Angelo. Just why don't you provide the listeners maybe really what the mission of the Columbus Foundation is and how you go about celebrating the contributions of so many Americans of Italian descent?
Excellent, excellent question. The mission of the Columbus Citizens Foundation is to provide an educational opportunity to youngsters who do not have the financial means but the qualifications to go to some of the best schools. We have over 600 students in our scholarship program. They're all students worthy of the scholarship. They have to be need-based and academically qualified. And this is what keeps us going. This is what makes us do this big celebration, this weekend celebration with a gala, a laying of the wreath at Columbus Circle on Sunday, and then, of course, the biggest parade. I have to say that one of the exciting parts for me personally is being in St. Patrick's Cathedral on Monday morning when Cardinal Dolan gives the Mass. So that's a real thrill. But our mission is to help people. We're a philanthropic organization as much as we're cultural. We, of course, we're proud of our Italian heritage and culture, and we really want to promote that.
And I got to remind everybody, the parade will be on WABC Radio between 12 o'clock and 3 o'clock on Monday. It'll be live.
And we're there.
And we're all going to be there. And also the parade will be on WABC television. And
they can watch it online, WABCRadio.com.
Yeah, and it'll be a terrific day.
And we're going to have Joe Piscopo. It's not Columbus Day without Joe Piscopo, and he's going to be our moderator on TV on Channel 7 on Monday. And he's just an incredible guy. I can't say enough great things about him. He's such a dear friend, and like you, John, he is a huge supporter of our community.
Joe is the best.
We're looking forward to Monday.
Angelo, looking forward to seeing you on Monday. God bless you. Have a great weekend. And the sun will shine on the Italians on Monday, I guarantee.
I certainly hope so. Weather is important for everyone to be at the parade. So thank you so much again, John, and all your listeners. And Mr. Fisella, I think you got a lot of Italians in Staten Island. Hopefully they all show up at the parade.
Thank you. We'll be there, Angelo.
He's
thanks for all you
show
do.
Up at the polls.
November 2nd.
I'm driving to the polls on November 2nd.
For borough president, Vito Fisella.
Thank you, Angelo.
Thank you, Angelo.
Keep doing the great job you're doing.
We need an Italian in an important position. God bless you.
Thank you.
Lots of good luck to you.
God bless. Thank you. And now we have other issues going on in New York City, and we have other issues going on in Staten Island. Where do we begin? Judge?
I have a real concern about this program that's being pushed by the state legislature and the governor on congestion pricing. Congressman, what's your view of this?
Well, one issue that's actually more important to me than that, if I can take a point of personal privilege, is our son Dylan got engaged over the weekend to his new fiancée, Kirsten Peroni. So I want to wish them a public congratulations as well.
That is
so
wonderful.
Wasn't it his birthday?
It was his birthday last week. We wished him happy birthday.
Right.
Yes. And so
well,
we're very happy.
He plugs every week here.
Two great weeks in a row.
I don't know what he's going to do next week. But to your point, Judge, I think congestion pricing is a mistake. You know, people on Staten Island in particular will suffer disproportionately. I think it's just another money grab. We're talking about if you come below 60th Street in Manhattan, paying upwards of another, what, 20, 30 bucks. We don't know yet. But we already know Staten Island, given that it's an island, in order to get on and off, has to pay a toll. And so the only
If you're not on the ferry, you're hit by the Verrazano toll.
And when, if you go through New Jersey, there are three bridges that connect Staten Island to New Jersey. We are the only borough that has to pay a toll to go on and off the island. So now to add insult to injury would be an additional toll, an additional tax, if you will. And because we've, over the last several decades, have lacked adequate mass transit, Staten Islanders disproportionately have to use their car. So it's a double, perhaps triple whammy. I think it's a mistake. You're going to start to see more opposition from New Jersey come weighing in because they're going to take a stand against it. But for the people of Staten Island, it's a huge mistake.
And it's also terrible for a city, New York City, here in Manhattan, to try to do a recovery when you discourage people from coming in.
If you live in Brooklyn or live in Queens or Staten Island or the Bronx, if you want to go to your doctor in Manhattan, you can't go unless you pay below 60th
Street. Below 60th Street, you're paying for that.
Below 60th Street. If you're entering Manhattan below 60th Street, you are paying a toll. And again, the number is infirm, but it could go from $9, $10 every time you come in to upwards of $30
What is that going to do for Uber drivers? It's going to be such a domino effect on so many levels.
Governor, you know much more about it?
Well, I think the awareness of time. I was on Governor Cuomo's congestion pricing panel, and back in those days, it was different. I mean, we're in a completely different situation right now. I think we should welcome people to come to any part of Manhattan and leave it that way for a while and reassess it in 5 years.
The other big thing is they're trying to get rid of specialized schools. And I went to Brooklyn Tech. Jerry Nadler went to and Dick Morris went to Stuyvesant. A lot of my friends went to Bronx Science. What the heck is going on? We're going to ruin the education system further?
That's the gifted and talented program, too, they're going after.
Right. That's been scrapped. The mayor.
Yeah, it was announced today. And I think it's another big mistake. You know, we should incentivize every child at every level to perform to his or her fullest potential. And the reality is there's a lot of advanced kids in schools. And what somebody, it's all part of the same unfortunate woke culture of saying, no, we're going to punish kids who do well. And I think short-term it has a negative effect. Long-term it's going to have a terrible effect because rather than allow these kids to get to their fullest potential, we're basically putting the brakes on them. And we should be doing more to encourage, if you will, intelligent kids to excel, not less.
John, I'm going to think about this, and I'll tell you how I feel on Sunday morning. What time do you want me on? What time's your show? 8:30?
Well, we have another show that goes on at 8 o'clock in the morning, but we tape it at 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, I'm ready.
All right.
I was going to say, like Brooklyn Tech is, Staten Island Tech is an example of a school that was conceived about 25 or so years ago and has now become one of the best schools in New York City as well as the United States because it is all about encouraging successful kids to do even better.
I agree. Well, thank you all. The week is over. Judge Richard Weinberg, former Congressman Vito Fisella, and, I've endorsed you for borough president of Staten Island, and 31% of Staten Islanders listen to
thank
WABC.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
And Governor David Patterson.
Thank you,
Lydia
John.
Serrano, I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And all of us out there, celebrate Columbus Day and get ready for Columbus Day on Monday. God bless all our listeners, and God bless America.